He switched to a different volume, this one hardbound and bearing a lurid cover engraving of a lady in night attire being improbably menaced by a tumescent Mesozoic reptile. September 13, 1916. Violently, bestially drunk on that fermented mash of giant spiders the natives call gula gula. Still see huge green dinosaurs everywhere. Am having to gradually force myself to face the horrid truth that they might actually be real. After tea, with Roxton, Malone, and Summerlee out of the camp, disported myself with two of the hallucinatory Stone Age women hereabouts, enjoying to the full their supple and surprisingly real-seeming honey-coloured bodies. "Oh, that is quite enough, Holmes," I snapped. "The ravings of a man in an arachnolysin-induced delirium are hardly proof of the continued existence of dinosaurs." "Agreed, Watson. But if we read on? If we but read on?" December 1, 1916. Our return to England has been safely negotiated without either my confederates or customs and excise suspecting I had more in my baggage than declared. The egg is ovoid, as is only to be expected, about the size of a large coconut, porous-skinned and a bright saffron yellow in colour. I have been incubating it by stealing into the cargo hold and covering it with rotting kitchen waste, and in addition, whenever possible, sit on the egg personally. When questioned why I was sitting in rotting kitchen waste in the cargo hold by the ship's purser, I simply replied that I was incubating an egg which, when it hatched out, would develop into a 20-foot-long man-eating lizard, whereupon he simply grinned, tapped his cap in a friendly way, and left me to my own devices. February 2, 1917. My hatchling has arrived. I've been feeding it turkey giblets, which it consumes with gusto. Have named it Gladys, after Malone's carnivorous reptilian fiancée. Gladys very attracted to bright objects and movement. Already appear to have lost the cat, a huge, fluffy, useless article, good only for destroying valuable furnishings. Wife distraught, and begin to like Gladys already. April 10, Gladys over 6 feet long now. Intend to take her into one of that confounded bore Walton's lectures on the malleability of germplasm. I will say nothing and announce nothing. Just take her in on the end of a long piece of string and sit at the back and stare. Then let that pie-headed buffoon deny the existence of living paleozoans. Green, the children's music teacher, has packed his things and left. Complained about having to deliver lessons in the same room as Gladys. Claims music drives her into a bestial fury. Good riddance, for his music drives me into just such a fury, as he practices nothing but Holst's Jupiter at every hour of the day and night. Oh, to the point, Holmes. September 23. I have negotiated a regular meat supply for Gladys from a Mr. Glass, a heavily bearded importer of fine Irish beef. Have surveyed Mr. Glass's warehouse and suspect his beef was formerly in the habit of whinnying, but his prices are cheap. Two of his associates delivered the first consignment to our drawing-room, where Gladys is currently residing. The impertinent lackeys passed doubt on the ability of the window bars to prevent Gladys from escaping. Was only too ready to demonstrate to them how the windows could only be opened on the outside. September 25. Donned diver's helmet and steel gauntlets and took half-horse carcass into Gladys as a treat. Disaster. Window open, drawing room empty, three-toed claw prints disappearing over the lawn into the distance. Holmes snapped the book shut. Are you seriously suggesting that a Paleozoic carnivore is stalking Hampstead Heath? I have been checking public records, Watson. There have been over 15 cases of unexplained decapitations and disappearing animals on and around the heath in the last 12 months. The police no doubt failed to connect them with this investigation due to the fact that none of them involved trombones. So, a prehistoric monster is responsible for these killings? Not entirely, Watson. There are still facets of the affair that elude me. For example, in all 6 cases, listeners reported that the trombonist's solo was accompanied by a lone fiddle part, which joined the refrain just before the notes suddenly, tragically choked off.